KSCU Santa Clara presents Robots Attack. Movies, TV, video games, comic books, tech stuff, news, music. If it is geek, it's on Robots Attack. Participate in the show by commenting on Facebook, tweeting them at Robots Attack Me, emailing the show robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Now, Robots Attack.
All right, welcome to Robots Attack, the one and only Geek Center talk show here on KSCU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, the Underground Sound. I am Joe, and with me, of course, is...
Caleb.
And...
Jason.
That's Woo-hoo! Right, we're here on the eve of the Xbox One release, but we are going to entertain you in some Xbox One news. I definitely have some of that, but we have other stuff as well, but it's going to be a good show tonight. We'll have...
Are there any other kind?
A bad show.
Nah, it doesn't happen.
We could do a bad show,
I guess
it exists only in possible. Theory.
In an infinite universe of infinite possibilities, it is a possibility.
The infinity gauntlet of bad shows.
In some dimension.
Yeah. There you go. Some Avengers Thor references for you there.
Don't let Thanos get his hands on it.
Exactly.
He'll ruin the Marvel Universe.
Very, very, very true. Well, speaking of movies, let's jump right into the new releases and get this show on the road. I'm going to tell you about some movies coming out in the theater. We've got, if you're interested in a comedy, I can't guarantee this is going to be a funny movie, but they do put it in the genre of comedy. Delivery Man with Vince Vaughn, Chris Pratt, Colby Smulders, and Jack Rayner. The summary is an affable underachiever finds out he's fathered 533 children through anonymous donations to a fertility clinic 20 years ago. Now he must decide whether or not to come forward when 142 of them file a lawsuit to reveal his identity.
If you think that sounds unlikely, you haven't seen a Vince Vaughn movie lately.
What?
Very true. The next film is probably the bigger... of the releases this week. That would be The Hunger Games Catching Fire.
Woo!
The Hunger Games Catching Fire begins as Katniss Everdeen returns home safe after winning the 74th annual Hunger Games along with fellow tribute PETA Melkart. Winning means that they must turn around and leave their family and close friends embarking on a victor's tour of the districts. So, I'm looking forward to this one. It seems like it's been getting decent reviews, so...
It looks like they've really bumped up the production quality of it, too. Not that the first one was bad, but this one's like...
Yeah,
this one looks like they've really put money into it.
Hey, here's the budget.
Yeah.
It's bigger now.
Yeah.
more effects and more stuff.
I hear rumor it's effectively doubled the budget for this one. It's like...
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. If you're not interested in catching any sort of fire, you might want to maybe check out Is the Man Who Is Tall Happy?
Is that a title of a movie?
Yep. From Michael Gondry, the innovative director of Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind and The Science of Sleep, comes this unique animated documentary on the life of controversial MIT professor, philosopher, linguist, anti-war activist, and political firebrand Noam Chomsky. So if you're interested in some documentary stuff, check that out, maybe.
Well, sure.
There's a bunch of other limited release movies, so if those don't interest you, feel free to check out there's lots, but there's a little sample of what's in the theater this week.
Indeed. And if the theater isn't quite grabbing you, maybe you'll want to put something in your DVD or Blu-ray collection. Perhaps Two Guns on Blu-ray and DVD.
Dang, already.
In the fallout of a drug bust gone wrong, two undercover agents find themselves on the hit list. And the only way out is each other.
Yeah. It's a heartwarming story.
Of violence and Yeah, anyways.
of two guns.
Yeah.
All is bright on Blu-ray and DVD. Two ex-cons and former compatriots come together to sell Christmas trees in New York, but they may get more than money out of this Christmas venture.
Aww.
Yeah, that one's more of an aw. then there's Mars on DVD.
Aww.
When the discovery of life on the with the discovery of life on the red planet, a manned and robotic mission is sent out. On it, the crew learn more about what it means to love. It's apparently a human interest story.
Wait, what?
So this is a documentary?
Yes.
Okay.
No. changing subjects to from the world of cars comes Planes. Ooh. On Blu-ray 3D and DVD.
Ah.
In the footsteps of cars is Planes. A crop duster has dreams of being an air racer, and with the help of his friends, he makes his dream come true.
A snail that goes super fast.
You spoiled the ending.
Oh. It's like you haven't seen one of these movies before.
So when are they making trains?
They already have automobiles. So then, yeah, right, they can just smash the movies together.
Exactly.
And
that'll be the Avengers of this series. Unfortunately, no snails. That would break the infinity, whatever.
That would break reality as we know it. then there is also available The World's End on Blu-ray and DVD. A group of childhood friends reunite to attempt the epic pub crawl to The World's End. Their task takes an unexpected turn as the future of the world comes to the front.
If you haven't seen it, check it out.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
It's pretty fun.
Yeah.
It'll make
you want to drink beer.
Yeah, yeah.
I guarantee.
Yeah. Which will work out better if you're watching this at home than it did at the theater.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm.
Yeah. Could go for, yeah. Anyways.
At least without it becoming very expensive.
Yeah. Yeah, very quickly. Let's see. Also on Blu-ray and DVD is Violet and Daisy. Two teen assassins, Violet and Daisy, are called in for a simple mission, but the target is not what they are expecting.
Aww.
And then rounding out this week's, some of this week's releases is We Are the Millers on Blu-ray and DVD. Small-time pot dealer has to turn smuggler when a theft has him over his head in debt. Naturally, hijinks ensue.
Mm. Huh. Huh. Okay.
I remember reading that one off in the top five for a while.
It was in the top.
I think it like always stayed at number two or something.
It was
something.
Number two forever behind
box office,
Lee Daniels, the butler for like. It was,
yeah.
You know,
they
were
Trade and stuff. And Planes, I think even two was.
Yeah.
Was mixed in there. All right. Before I get to the video games, I'm going to tell everyone about the radio stream. If you want to listen to KSU, even when you're not near a radio, you can stream us whenever you want at KSU.org or on the TuneIn radio app or website and never be without the underground sound. All right. As I mentioned at the start of the show, this new system, Xbox One, is, you know, releasing at midnight tonight.
Little indie system.
Yeah. From a little indie company, Microsoft, I think they're called.
Mm-hmm.
I have a list of some of the games for the one, but I also have some others that are worth mentioning. So I'll just read a little. Here's a few of the Xbox One games releasing tonight and tomorrow. Dead Rising 3, Rise Son of Rome, Forza Motorsport 5, Killer Instinct, Zune Tycoon, which is also releasing on the 360, and Power Star Golf. Those are just little sample of some.
Did you say golf as in a
golf
body
as in the sport?
Golf, okay.
And supposedly it's actually pretty good. It's one of the downloadable titles.
Interesting.
For the one. All right, so moving on to things that aren't one related, we have the Adventure Time Explore the Dungeon because I don't know for the 360, PS3, 3DS, and Wii U. Unfortunately, some of the reviews I read don't seem to be terribly good, but hey, those are just people's opinions. Mm. All right, next we have Tearaway for the PS Vita. This, on the other hand, is the opposite, apparently, of Adventure Time. It's getting amazing reviews. Adventure through a vibrant, papery world with your new friend, Loda, a plucky messenger with a unique message to deliver to you. This paper world is small enough to hold in your own two hands, allowing you to reach into the game with your godlike powers and help Loda complete this very special delivery. Next we have The Legend of Zelda, A Link Between Worlds, which is also getting incredible reviews. Nintendo developers have crafted a new game set in the world of The Legend of Zelda: A Link to the Past. Yes, this is an actual sequel to A Link to the Past.
Oh, wow, that's a little bit classic there.
Mm-hmm. The game makes use of the 3D abilities of the Nintendo 3DS and allows Link to become a drawing and move along walls. And finally, we have Super Mario 3D World for the Wii U, another game that is getting amazing reviews. Big shock, the Zelda game, the Mario game are getting good reviews.
It's almost like they put effort into those games for some reason.
Work together with your friends or compete for the crown in the first multiplayer 3D Mario game for the Wii U console. In the Super Mario 3D World game, players can choose to play as Mario, Luigi, Princess Toad, Princess Peach, or Toad. It'd be kind of cool if there was a Princess Toad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's just a smidgen of some of the video games. If you're not interested in the Xbox One,
mm-hmm.
right?
I didn't want to, you know, load everybody like, I'm not getting the Xbox One, so I don't care about those games.
Exactly.
Here's some others for you then.
Mm-hmm. If you're not getting either of the new launch titles, the PS4 or the Xbox One, but you would like to fill your hands with something fun, you might consider some comic books. Try perhaps Batman and Two-Face, number 25. We learn more about this new Two-Face and his connection and the connection he shares with Carrie Kelly.
Aww.
And also there's Harley Quinn number 0. The Clown Prince's main squeeze is back in her own title.
Nice.
Yeah.
Sexy.
I don't know. The new design isn't really that interesting to me, but
I'll just pretend then in my mind.
Then there's Uncanny X-Men number 14 from the Marvel side. The aftershocks of Battle for the Atom are still being felt, and now Magneto is stirring the pot.
Ooh.
Oh, man.
Man, it's a metal pot.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I thought he was, like, drug reference or something.
Or
no.
He's stirring the pot with a metal
spoon.
Most likely, think. Spatula would work, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And also from the Marvel camp is X-Men number 7. Lady Deathstrike returns in the Muertes story arc, and she seems to be sporting a new Dios de la Muerte look. So, be interesting to see where that goes. Then from the not-big two publishers, Dark Horse, they have Star Wars, Dawn of the Jedi, Force War number 1. Yes, that's the full title. So this is back... This is not the Star Wars. This is closer to the more canonish Star Wars, which is spun off from Han, Luke, and Leia as we know them.
Okay.
It's not related to them in any way other than there's Jedi in Star Wars, but that's... Okay. Anyways.
My God.
Okay. The Rakata are invading, and the Jedi must join forces with old enemies to defend the galaxy.
My head.
From IDW comes Ben 10, number 1. Alien adventure on the high seas as Ben's ocean cruise takes an odd turn.
Ooh.
And out of Image comes A Voice in the Dark, number 1.
That totally sounds like a promo right there. Out of Image comes A Voice in the Dark.
First in a series of new stories from Image Comics. New to college, Zoe wishes for a new beginning, but her new gig as the late night DJ on the campus radio station may have opened more doors than she realized.
Oh!
Dun, dun, dun!
It's like worlds colliding.
Aww. Yeah.
Then from Archie Comics is Afterlife with Archie number 2. Jughead's hunt for brains pushes tensions to a fevered pitch as at the Halloween dance.
I hope that's as cool as it sounds like it should be.
The creative team is both Eisner Award winning, so it should at least be enjoyable at the very least.
Okay.
And if you're not really big on picking up comics at your local store, you might check out Bug Martini at bugmartini.com. It's a view of the curiosities of life as seen through the eyes of a bug. They're a little bit philosophical, sort of absurdist. Calvin and Hobbes kind of things. They're
okay.
Fun.
Okay.
Cool. All right. And if you need something, say, while you're reading said comics or novels or whatever you might be doing, here's a tiny sample of some new music this week to wrap up the new releases. We have Death Grips with their album No Love, Deep Web. The Sacramento Noise Rap Trio's second release ended its contract with Epic after it released the album online for free with an obscene cover image. It was officially released on CD/vinyl in 2013. There you go. Second, the band Blood Orange with Cupid Deluxe. The second release from Dev Hynes as Blood Orange includes guest appearances from such artists as Adam Bainbridge of Kindness, Clams Casino, MC Despot, David Longstreth of Dirty Projectors, Caroline Polenicek of Chairlift, Skepta, and Samantha Urbani of Friends. I don't know any of those people, but maybe you do out there. Third, we have Daughtry with Baptized. The fourth studio release for the rock band led by Chris Daughtry was produced with Martin Johnson and Rock Mafia. And we have The Hunger Games, excuse me, The Hunger Games Catching Fire soundtrack. The soundtrack is inspired by the second film, The Hunger Games franchise, featuring songs from Christina Aguilera, Coldplay, Ellie Goulding, Imagine Dragons, Lorde, The Lumineers, Of Monsters and Men, Santi Gold, Patti Smith, and The Weeknd. I've heard a sample of the Lorde song. It's actually a cover of Everybody Wants to Rule the World.
Oh, cool.
From Tears for Fears. It's Ooh. It's pretty cool. It's a different kind of take on it. I mean, if you're familiar with her style, sort of like low, simple kind of, it's kind of like that.
Okay.
And then finally, we have Magic Markers, Surrender to the Fantasy, the first release in 4 years for the Connecticut-based trio of Eliza Imbruglio, Pete Nolan, and John Shaw. So there you have it. A nice little sample of some of the new releases this week. Hopefully something in there interests you. If not, oh well, that's the best we can do. I mean, we can't, you know, force you to like stuff. I mean, that's your job.
Yeah, that's on you.
That's on you to come up with, you know, what you want to like.
You have homework.
We can only give you a sample of stuff. It's your job to do the rest.
Exactly. All right.
We're going to take a music break. I'm going to play the artist Unknown Relatives with the track Say What You Want from the album 2. But before any of that, like I said, we got a great show. And something that we like people to do is participate. And Caleb is going to tell you how you can do that.
That's right. If you would like to participate in the show with us, please go to Facebook and search for us. We are Robots Attack. That's two words. We should be the first thing you find. Or you can find us on Twitter. Our handle is Robots Attack Me, all one word. And there's always our email address, robotsattackshow@gmail.com. And if you're just trying to write that down real fast, relax. Robotsattack.me is our own website. We have archive episodes of our show there. And you can hit the button that says interact, which has links and that take you to Twitter and Facebook and email. So, or you can just leave a comment on the blog. It all works.
Exactly. It's very easy.
It is. And we check Twitter and Facebook throughout the show.
Yeah,
we will give you a shout out if you shout out to us.
Yeah. Even if it's on something we talked about earlier, if we've on to something else, don't worry about it. We just like it when you participate. All right.
Exactly.
Let's get to that music, and then we'll be back with the news here on Robots Attack, the one and only geek-centric talk show here on KACU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, The Underground Sound.
You're listening to Robots Attack. Follow them on Twitter at Robots Attack Me. Email them at robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Like them on Facebook. And check out the website at robotsattack.me.
All right, welcome back to Robots Attack, the one and only Geek Central talk show here on KACU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, The Underground Sound. You just heard the local artist Unknown Relatives. The track was Say What You Want from the album number 2. All right, we're in the news, so let's give the people the news.
The news.
Okay, number 1, Bill Gates wants to put condoms on you.
The story needs a little bit more detail, I think.
Is what? He buying
no,
me dinner first?
That's enough right there. At the very least a drink. Come on now.
No, actually, it's still an odd story.
No matter how you slice it, that's a weird headline and a weird story.
The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is basically putting together funds to develop the next generation of condoms.
Okay.
And the main idea behind it is to be able to develop them using graphene instead of any sort of latex or latex-y type of substance.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, cool thing about graphene is that it's basically impenetrable, so it shouldn't have any problems with leakage at all.
Mm-hmm. I guess the question would be if they can stand up to the shearing force, for lack of a better phrase.
Yes. I wasn't gonna acknowledge shearing force.
Plus two
personally.
For people mm-hmm. who are allergic to latex.
Yeah, that
includes me, actually.
It's actually a really good idea to find an alternate material to what we've been using, because if they can make it stronger, more effective, like closer to, you know, if they can get it above
closer
this,
to not being there.
Yeah. But as long as they can get the effectiveness above 60%, that's already a win.
Right. Yeah, and the idea, too, is that it's already a really strong substance. So it should be interesting to see what they come up with. And knowing the attributes of the material already, I'm kind of surprised that it hasn't been developed more fully. But
I think it's the flexibility of graphene isn't quite there yet.
Well, with a $100,000 grant from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, hopefully they will change that.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like it could be interesting.
Nice.
It actually doesn't seem like that much money now that I'm thinking about it, considering this is the Gates Foundation. But maybe this is just the beginning.
Yeah.
Maybe.
The first of several.
Baby steps.
Yeah. Baby condom steps. Sort of. I'm sorry.
That came out strange.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of something that isn't strange, the San Jose Animal Advocates, are you an animal lover who wants to help homeless animals find their forever homes but have limited time to volunteer? You can join San Jose Animal Advocates, a local nonprofit that is building a community network to help find loving, foster, and forever homes for pets in our local shelters. With your help, we can save countless animals. All it takes is a few clicks, and you can share their stories with your network of friends. It's easy. Join them at sjanimaladvocates.org. Or look for them on Facebook right after you're looking for Robots Attack page.
Woohoo!
And liking it, because that's what you want to do. Because
it's awesome.
And we'd love you for it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So for going on along the track of wrapping things in the future,
the future will be wrapped. And they say it will be televised. It's like, right. It'll be wrapped.
Mm-hmm. We're wrapping the now and the future. Wait. No. So a student at Washington State, a doctorate student, correction, at Washington State University, Marianne Tarun, has, by a lab accident, created a crystal with a conductivity that is 40,000 times more effective when exposed to light.
I was going to do this story last week. I got distracted.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So,
I'm serious.
I believe.
Why do you have to always sound like you're doubting me?
No, I believe you, because it's a really cool story.
Still sound like you're doubting me.
What makes this sort of unique is that it's getting us closer to effectively room temperature superconductivity, and when you can do that, and especially with crystalline structures, you can, instead of having the surface. When the whole entirety of the substance can be conductive, you can use the whole thing as a storage medium for data in data, and this is going to effectively make Kryptonian memory crystals.
Right. Insert like sci-fi reference here, like
yeah.
Whether it. It's Kryptonian or
Stargate.
Yes, exactly.
Pretty much almost every sci-fi system has like some version of like this crystalline memory storage.
So now when you go back and watch like sci-fi movies from the 70s and 80s and they're using like crystals.
Right, a little
just
quartz
because,
gem.
Yeah, just because they were like, hey, this
looks pretty.
Yeah.
Right. And we got it cheap
it'll show
at the
off
New Age
on
store.
The camera. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For dirt cheap. Now it's like, no, yes, this is what we were thinking. They would really actually use that. Yeah.
Right.
It's actually, yeah.
I think there were ideas that this was theoretically possible way back then, and that's what spawned all of it. But
yes.
The idea that it's actually becoming like within reach.
Yes.
The scary cool thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the, but this is just really cool because, like, you know, as it is now, like, when you open, if you were to open a hard drive, you would see several very, very thin platters of metal.
Mm.
And the reason for this is because the surface of it is reactive to magnetic flux.
Mm.
And that's why that's how hard drives work. They flip the magnetic poles to make bits, and it's
like
a lot of
switches.
A lot of computer science goes into this stuff. I won't bog you down with the details, but it works. Trust me. So, but that's the surface level. So you have to get several surfaces, and you start losing as they get closer and closer together. You start, you know, having problems. Isolating the signal you want to find is more difficult. But a crystal, like if you could use the entire structure, you exponentially expand the amount of data you can hold.
Right.
So it's a really cool
idea. About it this way. It's like stacking a bunch of Blu-ray discs on top of each other and having access to all of the layers without having to reshuffle the discs. It's sort of the same idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Yes. And potentially you could even access it from lots of different directions. Like since it's like, you know, a 3D object, you could,
yeah,
so
that's
you
true.
Could then make it a more, a faster access thing because you can, you know, have several points that could be accessed at the same time.
Better
like
throughput.
That. Mm-hmm. These are all, this is all still somewhat theoretical,
but
it's not there yet, but this is the first step towards actually coming up with something very much like that, which is totally rad.
Nice. Well, from incredible crystals to amazing pizza boxes.
We're still wrapping things in the future, right?
yeah.
You can layer them.
You can access it from multiple directions.
A New Zealand pizza chain turns your pizza box into augmented reality game.
Ooh. What?
New Zealand pizza chain Hell Pizza launched a 3D augmented reality game where players point their mobile devices at their Hell Pizza box and watch it come to life.
Ooh, I'm not sure Okay, I'm going to go with it. Okay.
Created by advertising agency One Fat Cheap, the Zombies from Hell game gives players the opportunity to win prizes like real pizzas and sides.
Oh, okay.
Players download the game from the iTunes App Store or Google Play, blah, blah, blah. You buy pizza from Hell Pizza, install and open the app, point their mobile device at the pizza box, and the box itself will transform into a game world on their phone. Zombies from Hell is a simple zombie survival game set in New Zealand's major cities. Players use weapons to shoot at zombies. Duh. Score points and bonuses.
No,
and
to make friends with them.
Yeah. And are rewarded with real world pizza related prizes. So yeah, there you go. See, even pizza boxes can be used for stuff. And apparently I heard there was a new Guinness World Record of like some guy like collecting pizza boxes or something. And he showed his picture and he's wearing this weird like barbershop quartet shirt it kind of looked like, and he was like really happy and he was surrounded by all these pizza boxes, and I'm not gonna judge, but yeah.
there you go.
I can't imagine that being a good idea as far as a smell side of things, but
yeah,
maybe he cleaned them out
with his tongue.
I didn't say how, I just maybe he did, I don't know,
carefully in an overextended periods.
Yeah, something like that.
Anyway, moving on.
Segue from that.
Much like stacking pizza boxes on top of each other will cause an effect where they create pressure on each other, they have figured out a way to use that same effect to make water cooling PCs even better.
Ooh.
See, I kind of pulled it off.
Yeah.
Sometimes I even press myself.
Impressive. Most impressive.
Okay. The basic idea is this. We're all familiar with trying to grill something, and you're used to the idea. If you want it to grill like faster for a short period of time,
mm-hmm.
put some weight on it.
Yeah.
So you smash it down, and it basically, you kind of have to twist your brain a little bit. It's not about so much applying heat to the thing as it stealing heat from the thing you're pressing it on. So when you think about it that way, you can start adding it to things like water cooling a computer.
Because it's stealing the heat away from the thing.
Right. So the question is, how do you smash water into a computer? And that's generally been a problem.
Hulk smash?
Yeah, usually when you try and smash water into your computer, you just break the glass and fry your computer.
Right, yeah. In order to avoid the frying, they did something kind of clever.
Okay.
Or at least they're researching it right now. Basically, if you end up adding a conductive particle to the water,
uh-huh,
and then electromagnetically compress that particle against the areas that you need the most cooling, it ends up creating a lot more cooling power in those areas.
So they have stuck a magnet into the heat sink, and that
and then
pulls,
made the water magnetic, sorta.
And then pull that material towards the heat sink. The water moves it across it, and it has better thermal contact.
Because as soon as it's past it, where it's gotten that really good contact, it mm-hmm. spreads out again.
Uh-huh.
And so it ends up
dissipating the heat more quickly.
Exactly. So it's a cool idea for computers, but
mm-hmm.
Back to your ideas about creating like better superconductors and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
This can be applied on a very large scale also.
Oh.
It's not easy because making magnets that large end up creating their own problems,
mm-hmm.
but it's a new idea to create very efficient superconductors.
That would be really interesting because that could really be interesting because as it is now, the biggest supercomputers are effectively run off of very, very cold air from like air conditioners or giant refrigerators and liquid hydrogen and stuff like that.
Yeah, giant freezers that they put a computer in.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this has some potential that is pretty cool in my view. And thank you.
That's what you did there. Pretty cool.
Thank you to Extreme Tech for pointing it out and giving me the nifty comparison to grilling.
Yeah.
If you want to make it cool, you got to put pressure on it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's your
segue to what? No.
No?
No. Oh, okay.
Did you know what I was spoofing there?
I think so.
If you like, you got to put some pressure on it or use the ring to put some pressure on it. Let's see. So going from that to
rings of Saturn.
It sounds like a mean song when you put it that way.
Let's see. The ringing in the halls of justice. How about that?
Okay. All right. I'm with you so far. My pants are still on.
League?
No, not the Justice League, but the halls of justice. Because in case you hadn't heard, a while back, Google started a thing where they were going to scan books that were sort of out of copyright, like or abandoned, for lack of a better phrase, like books that no one was going to buy again, effectively.
Okay.
I mean, somebody might buy a used copy of it, but like it's not
here and there, but
yeah, it'd be like an old research paper from like 1950 something.
Largely affects college texts.
Mostly college texts, old tech books, things that were like
pretty outdated, just
outdated or abandoned novels. Someone wrote this in 80 something, and then just like it didn't go anywhere. It didn't.
Like 34 Shades of Grey. There's no ring to it. I'm gonna leave it, and then mm-hmm. someone like 50 was a better number.
So, yeah, so things in that realm of book, or just in old newspapers and things like that. Well, Google was scanning all of these and was going to make them electronically available to people, libraries, etc.
Okay.
The Authors Guild flipped out.
Mm.
I would use a stronger word,
but
I can't say it on the radio.
Yeah.
Imagine a table being flipped.
And someone saying something that uses little symbols as they flip it.
Right.
But the
pressure comes along, you may flip it.
yeah.
Nice.
Very true.
Got a theme going.
And the courts have upheld the fact that Google is not breaking the laws and the contract of the Authors Guild. Like they really don't have any case to bring against Google other than, because like there's no lost revenue in this, because like not that no one cares about these books, but no one really cares about these books. Yeah. They're not like The Great Gatsby or right. Huck Finn. It's not those kinds of books. It's
simply put, because Google had an altruistic reason for doing this, the court allowed it.
Yeah. And they aren't trying to profit from it other than because Google is Google and they're really an advertising company that also does search. They have ads against like the searches for the books, but it's not like, you know, the wholesale surrender of books to the internet is not that that's the Authors Guild was all up in arms about.
Right.
Isn't what happened.
Right. And that's the way they were selling it too at the very beginning. They were trying to demonize Google very early on as trying to do this, and then slowly the details came out and it was like, they're not really trying to do that at all.
And honestly, the sales of some of the books that they have scanned have gone up because they were scanned. It's going back to the whole like music industry thing where when you give some of it away or make it readily available, the chances of it being sold actually go up.
Up, yeah.
Music industry, game industry, please listen. So, you know, it's, you know, hip hip hurrah for the justice system coming through and, you know, putting a little sense behind it, and, you know, technology actually won out in this case as opposed to the commercial interests, for lack of a better phrase. Like, so yeah, there you go. Pretty interesting stuff. There's more details on the EFF link that I put up on Facebook and Twitter. So there you go.
We post all the links to the stories on our Facebook and Twitter pages. So if you miss something, want to go back and check, because a lot of times there's pictures or videos and stuff, and since those don't really translate over well, you know, the radio.
Yeah.
You can go and check them out for yourself. Obviously not while you're driving, if you're doing that right now, but you know, in your earliest convenience and you so desire. But yes, if you are just tuning in to Robots Attack here on KSCU Santa Clara 103.3 FM, the Underground Sound, I'm going to give you my next story. Now, maybe some of you heard about this proposed sequel to It's a Wonderful Life. Now, see...
What?
Yeah. There was news.
I heard all about
there was, it. There was news like earlier this week. I think it was earlier this week or late last week or something.
Okay.
You know, they were going to do a sequel to It's a Wonderful Life. Now, you know, the classic,
like colorizing it wasn't bad enough.
The classic with Jimmy Stewart and, you know, the angel gets the wings and
Hugh Gravy.
Stuff. And it's been so long since I've watched it, but you know, it's big. It's a big classic holiday movie. And so there was a lot of uproar, like, you're going to do a sequel to this?
Right.
Even though, you know, it sounded pretty cool. They were going to go kind of like a supernatural element, make it more of like a horror, like poltergeist. Wow. Like, I just made all that up. Anyway, for those who got extremely mad and angry and were getting ready to riot, put down the pitchforks, toss some water on those torches. It's not happening. According to the New York Post, producer Bob Farnsworth and writer Martha Bolton don't even have the rights to the original story about a frustrated businessman who's shown what life would have been like if he never existed. As it turns out, those rights currently belong to Paramount Pictures, which has no interest in making a sequel at this time.
I should hope not.
Quote, no project relating to It's a Wonderful Life can proceed without a license from Paramount, said a studio rep in a statement. To date, these individuals have not obtained any of the necessary rights, and we would take all appropriate steps to protect those rights. So it looks like the 1946 classic will stay non-sequelified.
Okay.
Which sort of goes into, you know, if we have time tonight to get to our core topic of comic book sequels, sort of fits in there. So maybe we'll see. Maybe there could be a sequel to It's a Wonderful Life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, throw some Avengers in there, and I'm sure people will go and check it out.
Definitely. Hulk smash Angel.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Although Angel is an X-Men, and so Fox owns X-Men, so it'd have to do it, like, sort of sneakily, like, there's that person with feather wings.
Right. Yeah.
Ah, the tangled web of licensing.
Yeah, well, we go from that to the tangled web of technology.
Hey.
Not my best one, but... I don't know if you're like me, and every once in a while you kind of miss the old ways of manipulating data and whatnot with good classic things like toggle switches and tactile sliders and knobs and arcade-style buttons.
Analog on it.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, most computers and... with the big hike in touchscreen technology, all of this stuff has pretty much been relegated to the past, but somebody is trying to fight that for all they're worth by starting, of course, a Kickstarter.
Hey!
And this is one that I'm actually really tempted to do because it sounds kind of cool to me. It basically is a set of switches and knobs and toggle buttons and regular buttons that they're little cubes that can plug into each other in any way that you want them to.
Okay.
And so it basically allows you a daisy chained set of knobs and switches that you can make like a full soundboard if you want to, just by connecting all of this stuff.
Okay.
And then having it plug into the appropriate app and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So, they're building this thing, and it looks like it has some kind of cool little extras. You can choose to have it either a brushed aluminum or in a nice cherry wood. It also has lighting so that you can see your knobs in the dark.
Sounds like fun.
It's very valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it looks really cool to me, and the current pledges for it are actually less than similar devices that I've seen out there that just stand alone, and you get four of these things with the pledge. So yeah, this is one of those really tempting things for me and any of you other people out there who miss the past and all of those incredibly ornate Star Trek consoles that had all of this stuff for no good reason.
Or the old, like, World War II, like, you know, pilot's board where it has all the switches and the big old levers and stuff.
Yeah, and that's the one thing that I think they're missing. They really need some of those, like, the really classic toggle switches that give that really satisfying, like,
snap.
Flick. Yeah. But I think they had to keep in mind that this was going to sit flatly on a table, so.
Yeah, there's that too.
Yeah.
Alrighty, so from the history and analog devices to cooking, which is an analog way of doing things, if you're in a new town, like you're staying in the hotel, you're not sure where to go eat, but you're hungry, and you happen to have some ingredients with you, you can use your coffee maker.
I keep flour in my pocket at all times.
That could work, but it's not quite what I'm with. But
bam, flour.
But your coffee maker could be your lifesaver. This guy has made up a set of instructions for making food in a coffee maker. So all you need is a coffee maker to do this. So you can steam things.
College students here just perked up. What?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can,
and people in small apartments.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you can steam things in the basket where the coffee grounds would go.
You totally can.
You can make couscous or oatmeal or what have you down.
Couscous, oatmeal together.
I don't know about together.
A couscous,
it's possible.
Oatmeal together.
in the coffee pot section, and you could even poach meats and things like that down in the coffee pot section as well. So when he developed this, he was getting, he had the idea because
he was poor, very poor.
Yeah, the guy came with these recipes. Like he knew someone that was in the military, and the guy would like email home like, "Man, the food here is not very good. I'm sure there was stronger language involved."
Man, you and the potty language stories.
I know. I know.
Thank you for cleaning them up.
His nephew living in, who was stationed in Afghanistan, and so this guy was like, "Well, what do they have out in the field that soldiers can carry?" And one of the things they can carry with them as a as a personal item is a coffee maker.
Oh man!
So he figured out
so good out there.
He figured out how to make food in a coffee maker. There's a book, and he also posted a few of the recipes online, so you can kind of check them out.
As a teaser.
And a link to the article found on NPR. I just thought that was like one of those like, wait, someone did what? effectively making a meal in a coffee pot. It's just kind of
best
brilliant.
Thing since the coffee cup brownie.
Mm. There you go.
Which I don't think you can make using that method, but still.
No, baking is a bit beyond what it can do, but you could, steaming and poaching is definitely on the list, and grilling, if you are willing to put in the effort and use the hot plate as a grill, it is an option.
But unfortunately not bread baking and beyond.
Yeah. Baking would probably be a bit beyond its capabilities.
Beyond.
But,
not bad.
But maybe the next generation of coffee makers will allow you to bake goods. Who knows?
One can only hope. Yeah. I'm going to make a special coffee maker just for the military that will have an oven in it.
They'll find a way to get those old like Easy Bake ovens and like convert, add some something into it that turns it into an actual thing that can bake stuff.
A larger light bulb?
Yeah. Like a super duper crazy LED that actually like heats, but then
now halogen powered.
Like, yeah. With nuclear technology. Anyway, like that story and all the stories you mentioned before, you can check out our Facebook page and Twitter page to get the links to that. So from making food in a coffee pot to a robot that's not a coffee pot.
It rhymes.
But like, you know, his buddy, I mean, I guess if you want to consider R2-D2 a he or a she.
Human cyborg relations. Yeah. It's astromech droid.
If you C-3PO, I'm sure, called R2-D2 at one point a coffee maker.
Yeah.
In their long time together. But anyway, Lucasfilm has confirmed that R2-D2 is in Star Wars Episode 7.
Yes. Oh, okay.
Beloved droid will be in J.J. Abrams' sequel. They confirmed a few days ago that everyone's favorite overweight glob of grease, R2-D2, will be back on the big screen in Episode 7. Rumors began to swirl after an official behind-the-scenes photo was posted online last week. Not only that, but two Star Wars fans have been hired to build the droid for the big screen.
Nice.
The company announced that Lee Towersey and Oliver Steeples of the R2-D2 Builders Club have officially joined the creature effects team of director J.J. Abrams' upcoming sequel. They met Lucasfilm honcho Kathleen Kennedy while she was at last summer's Star Wars celebration in Europe.
Nice.
Kennedy admired their handiwork at the show, during which the time they quipped about willing to work on the film. Little did they know that Kennedy was going to take them up on that offer.
That's pretty cool, though. It's a nice grassroots story of, like, we're fans of the movie.
Yeah.
We're making the movie? Oh, we're making the movie.
Yeah, I mean, in a sense, I mean, it's being directed by a huge fan of the series. So it's like the fans are getting to make this next set of Star Wars movies.
It's fan starters.
So that's kind of cool. I've seen some of the videos from the appearances that people have done with these, and they're really impressive.
Yeah, they're pretty cool.
Yeah, there's a quote from Towersy. What we need to do is improve on the mechanics. We're currently in a research and design phase where we're looking at drive options for reliability in all possible terrains. Whether it be a one motor does all or a system which is easily adjusted depending on terrain, we have a few mocked up ideas which we hope to road test very soon.
Yeah, so. I was about to say, like, what's he going to be able to do next? Like warp jump or something like that? Since, I mean, he got to fly last time.
It's true.
Yeah.
So and where the, do you go from there? How do you beat that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Make him an actual prop as opposed to a CGI creature?
That will.
Well, I mean, besides the, that.
But that's the thing, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this confirms and, I mean, you know, maybe they'll have some CG shots also, yeah. But at the very least, they're going to have a real model like R2-D2.
On set, yay. That's kind of cool.
Instead of just the dome.
Oh, let's not bring that up again.
Or was it the other way around?
It was a dot, but yeah.
Anyway.
Before you get to that.
Yes.
We have... Television, a history! The Museum of American Heritage presents Television, a History, an exhibit displaying a variety of unique 1940s and 50s eras televisions, television sets, from the museum's collection. The exhibit explores everything from how television works in its to its social impacts. The exhibition opened September 27th, 2013, and will run through March 23rd, 2014. Or 2014. And regular exhibit hours are 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., Friday and Saturday and Sunday, unless otherwise noted. The museum is located at 351 Homer Avenue in Palo Alto, and admission is free.
Nice. All right, let's do one last round of stories.
Sounds good.
Okay, the mad scientists at MIT are doing mad science. I know.
Mad science.
Crazy, right? Just when you thought that there was nothing new in the world of 3D printing,
mm-hmm.
Imagine handheld 3D routing.
Handheld 3D routing. Okay, so like...
So basically you put a block down in a very specific place that is monitored through very precise magnetic fields.
Okay.
Then you give somebody effectively a Dremel tool
mm-hmm.
that knows from those fields when to turn on and off.
Uh-huh.
So the person is moving the thing around, carving,
mm-hmm.
but it never know the person never knows when it's going to carve, when it's not going to carve. So it's just moving, and the machine is turning off at the correct times in order to do it.
What?
Yeah, so basically you can be carving something with this thing, have no idea what you're carving.
Until it's done.
Right, and the kind of cool thing about it is that since it doesn't completely perfectly account for the different angles people can come at it from
mm-hmm.
and so on, it gives it sort of a nifty handcrafted look.
Uh-huh.
Added bonus, you can have multiple people working on it at the same time with multiple tools.
Okay.
So you can have, like, a team building exercise of, like, what's it going to be?
Mm-hmm.
I guess a polar bear. No, it's redwood. It couldn't be a polar bear. It must be Kodiak or some such.
Mm-hmm. See, I would have gone with, like, it's the next game show. Like, instead of, like, Wheel of Fortune, where you got to guess the letters, you got to guess the shape as you're carving it, and you can get extensions on time and stuff like that.
I see some potential there. But on the other side of things, to me, the really awesome thing about it is it gives a template for, in the future, having... a 3D modeling machine
mm-hmm.
that is just a handheld device.
Which is sort of awesome, too.
Right.
And a step up from the pin that they were working on that has, like, that leaves a trail of material behind and does 3D
right.
stuff that way. Or a different version of that idea.
So it works from the opposite direction, but still, it's, to me, a super cool idea for moving forward into the future.
Very.
And creating things. On the fly with a fairly small tool,
mm-hmm. and it also could be interesting to do that with do something like that with like an effects team, like special effects team, like they're building a prop.
Oh yeah,
and like they know what they're building, but they can still like tweak it to make it look one way or look one way or the other, and they need to build like 50 boats instead of having to go in and like hand like you know shave it so it looks like it, so that each like unique.
You finished that word. It totally sounded like you said something else.
They can actually like customize the uniqueness of each one while they're making it, as opposed to having to, you know, go back and redo it after they've molded the exact same thing over and over and over again.
You're right. Gonna need a bigger boat. We can do that.
Mm-hmm. Let's put another one behind it. Click. I don't know. It has potential for some really cool applications.
Oh yeah.
Definitely.
Oh yeah. Like many of the like some of the stuff that MIT does. I mean,
yeah,
it's true.
I mean,
the grand wizards at MIT.
They're okay.
Yeah. Alrighty. So from the future of 3D printing, or a version of 3D printing, mm-hmm, to mm-hmm. robots that
3D
will save
carving.
Your, 3D carving.
Yeah, good point. Carving.
To robots that save your life. Not a very good transition, but it's going to be cool. a group known as in Tehran, Iran, have been working on what they call the PARS rescue robot. It is a device that can spot drowning people out in the ocean and fly a life preserver out to them.
Huh.
Okay.
So, this is obviously very cool in terms of like use of technology, but it's also a life-saving device on two sides. Because typically, a person goes in to rescue someone who is drowning, it's not uncommon for the rescuer to be drowned with the drowning person. This eliminates one person from drowning, and it brings the life-saving device out to the person that is in trouble. They have something to hold on to, keep their head above water. They can they can relax, rescue team goes out to them and can pull them back in a more relaxed state. This is potentially a higher chance of survival for everyone, and it's a really interesting idea. The robot's relatively simple. It's a multi-rotor copter.
Quadcopter.
It's got a lot
Tricopter?
More.
Tricopter?
It's like octocopter or something.
Whoa, it's double the quadcopter?
Dang.
It's got a lot of rotors. I didn't quite get a
double the future.
More copter than your words have room for.
See, 1, 2, 3. Yeah, it's somewhere between 8 and 10. I can't get a good count on it from the pictures that I'm looking at. But
that's too many. I'm going to say it right now. And he's tone it down. And unless it incorporates my other very original and equally soothing idea, it needs to deliver a martini along with the life preserver.
There could be a little ice chest in there. So when the person's relaxed, it like goes, here you go, sir or madam. And then, you know, it opens up.
maybe version 2.0.
Robot voice
martini
never gets
for
old
you.
To me. I mean, I hope they never master like robot speaking normally, just because, I mean, robot voice is so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shaken or stirred.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe PARS rescue robot version 2.0.
Yeah,
we'll have like a small rum flask on there.
It's so better,
or something like that. I don't know.
Oh, but 2.0.
Right.
So
they'll call it the Saint Bernard.
Mm-hmm.
Even though,
but they'll spell it with numbers and letters and things with molecular structures and stuff.
Probably, because it's all sciencey and whatnot.
Yeah.
Although I don't know if Saint Bernard's necessarily swam all that much, but still. I mean, it makes sense in my mind, so we're going with it, right?
Sure.
Yes.
The device has a 4.5 kilometer range, so it can actually get a decent ways out to people. So if you were, say, caught in a riptide, they could actually probably get something to you so you could survive back out to calm waters where they can get you easily, or to a boat or whatever. So
yeah, I can imagine one of those things kind of roosted on top of each of the, like, the little lifeguard stations at a beach or whatnot.
Yeah. So there you
looking
go.
Around the beach creepily.
Yeah.
Well,
I want to rescue that one.
Speaking of things that are creepy, my last story to wrap up the news, Guillermo del Toro's The Strain is going to become a series on FX.
Okay.
FX is placed at...
At first, I felt like I should be wait, Guillermo del Toro is only moderately creepy.
Oh, no. The FX has placed a 13-episode order for the drama series The Strain from Guillermo del Toro, author Chuck Hogan and writer-producer Carlton Kuse, which is based on the best-selling vampire novel trilogy of the same title, written by del Toro and Hogan. So The Strain begins production later this month in Toronto, and the series is scheduled to premiere in July of next year. So
when you're strained.
Sure. Yarmos come out of the rain? I don't know.
But yeah, there's much more to the story and the rest of our stories as well. So if you want to go and read them and check them out, go to our Facebook page and our Twitter page as well. And you want to remind the folks again, all those things. And then,
yes, if you wish to find us on Facebook, do a search for Robots Attack, two different words. And if you want to find us on Twitter, we are Robots Attack Me, all one word. And we are also at robotsattackshow@gmail.com. And finally, robotsattack.me is our own website where we have archive episodes of the shows. And under the button that says interact, we have links to Facebook, Twitter, and email. It's good stuff. We will shout out to you if you shout out to us. And plus, it's just awesome to be a part of the show.
Exactly.
So get involved. It is. We take comments.
Believe
as
us,
well
we
as,
know.
Yeah.
We take comments as well as story ideas. So I've had a couple come in that way. So there you go.
Nice. Cool. All right. Let's get to a music break. I'm going to play the artist Turn Me On Dead. Let's see, it's sort of fit the vampire type of thing. From the album Turn Me On Dead. I don't know the name of the track because the CD case does not have the song listed, but it is the first track on the album. So, you know, if you want to go and look for it for yourself, it's the very first track. So anyway, you're listening to Robots Attack, the one and only Geek Central talk show here on KSCU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, the Underground Sound. We will be back with more Robots Attack. In fact, we'll be back with Caleb's Corner. Want to tease the folks what we got for tonight?
Tonight?
What you have for tonight?
I forgot to mention it last week, but I'll talk about the Switchfoot concert that I went to.
Nice.
All right. Definitely want to stick around for that. All right, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Robots Attack. Follow them on Twitter at RobotsAttackMe. Email them at RobotsAttackShow@gmail.com. Like them on Facebook. And check out the website at RobotsAttack.me.
Ticket giveaways. Do you want free tickets to a concert? KSU's got you covered, man. Just listen in and you could win. To see which shows we're giving away tickets for, go to KSU.org and click on promotions. Seems pretty easy.
And now, it's time for Caleb's Corner.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Robots Attack. This is Caleb's Corner. And as I teased before the song, I'm talking about a concert that I got to go to which was one part concert, one part film debut for the band Switchfoot. They made a movie about their last tour. The tour that they used to write the music that is on the new album, which is the same title as the film, which is called Fading West. It's actually really interesting. They show the film in its entirety. It's a lot of fun to watch because the guys are a pretty relaxed bunch out of San Diego. So like did they
show it first?
Yeah, they showed that first, and then they did a set of songs afterwards, and they broke up the songs with a little bit of Q&A from the audience. So it was kind of fun that way. In the film, it's a world tour, so they go to New Zealand, Australia, Bali. Where else did they go? They went all over South Africa, all over the place. And it's equal parts like concert film and surf movie, kind of like Endless Summer kind of thing, where they go hitting all these different surf spots around the world. And
okay,
and then interspersing it with music and then talking about kind of life on the road and what's it like to be part of a band and things like that. It was really fun, really interesting. And they even had interviews with other artists that I was not expecting to see in the film. Was like
such as
the lead singer from Bad Religion,
huh.
Several other people that my brain is totally blanking on who they are right now. But when I saw them, I'm like, oh, it's that guy. but yeah, it was really cool. And they go around the world. And they have several of their surfing like kind of idol. Like world championship surfers go out to some of the spots with them to surf. It was really cool. It closes out the movie closes out with their performance at the surf event that they do called the Bro-Am, which is a charity based surf contest for homeless children in San Diego and Southern California area. So, which is really cool. And like, it's like the whole point of it is to take amateurs and professionals and bring them together into one event.
Oh, okay.
And just have everyone have fun. Like, there's no like really big prize per se.
Oh, okay.
Everyone goes out, has a good time, and, you know, participates and, you know,
The prize is the warmth of your inner spirit.
Mm-hmm. And a concert at the end of the event. So, you know, there you go.
Was this the first time you've seen Switchfoot in concert or no?
No, this is the fourth.
Sadly, no.
Fourth time I've seen them in concert, but it's the first of this format, and it was a lot of fun. Like and one of the things that I really appreciate about them as a band is that they aren't like super like, we are the megastar band. You know, we are the pinnacle of everything you think is cool right now.
Okay,
because we're in the spotlight, and it's like
do they at least dress that way?
They dress like guys that live in San Diego and they're not on tour.
Okay.
Like they're pretty relaxed. I mean, they're well dressed, but they're not like wearing like, you know, designer labels or anything like that.
No bedazzled shirts.
No, they're not that kind of band.
Okay.
But like what's really kind of, one of the things that I like is the lead singer John Foreman, and who's him and his brother, the founders of the band, or two of the key members of the band. One of the things he likes to do is go out into the audience and like kind of just walk around and like as he's performing, like, you know, include us, the audience, as part of the performance, which is kind of unique. It's like
it's just not done.
It's uncommon. You know, he's not like, yes, they are a rock band. He is the lead, but he's not bigger than us. He's one of us. He just has a gift that he wants to help share with us and bring us in.
Does he put the mic? Like, does he have people?
I didn't see him do that this time, but like, you know,
that would compromise the art.
So there was a couple people in the audience. Like, he would walk across the armrests of the chairs and stuff. Like, and so people would, like, you know, everyone would, like, hold kind of like hold him up as he walked by. By. This one girl, like a couple rows up, one row up from us, had like, she had like this big floppy hat, and he was wearing a kind of a fedora style hat, and they swapped for like part of the song. Like, he was singing wearing her hat, and then they swapped back before he walked back to the stage. But it's just kind of nice to be at a concert, part of an experience, and then be not just sharing the experience with us and the performers on stage, but having the performance sort of come out into the audience. It was really interesting.
I'd think it would be a lot more fun for them too.
Yeah. And that gets back into their philosophy. It's not about them as a band. It's about message and music and, you know, sharing that together with everybody. It's like it's trying to be bring people closer together as opposed to just sending like our adoration towards the stage kind of thing.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, not like Metallica.
And compare names to anybody. I'm just saying, I like the way they do it. That's all.
I'm sure they would do that too in an intimate venue where they feel safe.
Sure.
I don't know.
that was another cool thing. Like, it was a really small place. Like, the Rio in Santa Cruz is a very small, small venue.
Cool.
There's not a bad seat in that place because it's so small. But other than the seats aren't raked really well, so like if there's someone tall in front of you, they kind of block. But other than
wearing a crazy big hat.
Yeah.
Could be a problem.
Mm-hmm. But
that's the real reason why he took that woman's hat.
The person behind was like, thank you. I can see the band now.
Why couldn't she just keep the fedora?
But yeah, it was fun.
Do you know, is this tour or concert, are they, is it, was this the last show?
No, they're still going on. There's a bunch more. If you go to Switchfoot's website, they have the rest of the tour dates there. Okay. And tickets are sold through their website. They have a they also have a preview of the film up there.
So yeah, so we can link to that through our Facebook page and Twitter and stuff. So.
Definitely.
In the Caleb's Corner post,
mm-hmm.
go there and get more information. Because yeah, that's kind of a neat, kind of change it up, like see a little film and then hear some music and then.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really cool that one of the things that's neat is that they have they have VIP tickets you can get that include like hanging out with the band after the show.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wow.
So you can get either regular or.
Fedora not included.
Yeah. Fedora may or may not be included. But it's good times. If you get a chance to go, I personally recommend it, and my views do not necessarily affect those of KSCU, Santa Clara, or anybody else in the room besides myself. Just putting that out there.
The disclaimer, little star.
Yep.
All right, nice. All right, let's take another music break, and then we'll come back with the core topic for the show. I'm going to play the artist Dog Party. The track is Best Friend from the album Lost Control. And the topic for the core tonight will be, for the most part, like superhero movie sequels, sort of what we like, what we don't like, what we sort of seems to be the trend that maybe they do, or maybe they could change up stuff, what makes them better or not as good or as the originals, this or that. So if you feel like participating in that, definitely hit us up on Facebook and Twitter, email us, you know, your thoughts on superhero sequels, because they're not stopping.
No,
so
not for a while.
There's plenty coming.
They're going strong through 2015 for sure.
Yeah. So, all right, let's take that music break and then we'll be back with more Robots Attack.
You are now entering the core.
That's right. Welcome back to Robots Attack, the one and only Geek Central Talk Show here on KCU Santa Clara 103.3 FM, the underground sound, and you're in the core. And tonight's core is about superhero movie sequels. So this idea kind of popped in my head because we recently saw Thor, The Dark World.
The second one, if people...
In a world of darkness.
Of darkness. And caves and sand and dirt, I guess. Right? That was The Dark World, right?
It was a fair amount of those things.
You know, it just sort of got me thinking, like, you know, the first movie generally in a superhero series is, for the most part, the origin story.
Right.
You know, how the character becomes the superhero or the hero and all that jazz. And
how did we get where we are?
Yeah. And, you know, there's been different takes on it, you know, as from Batman to Superman to just about everything, you know, had some sort of variation on it, depending on kind of the setting of when the film was made. You know, if you compare the Tim Burton Batman to, you know, the Chris Nolan Batman Begins, you know.
Right.
It's just,
timing's a little bit different, but
it's
effectively
you know,
the same.
The same origin story, but just told in a completely different kind of way, like a different sort of style and take on it.
Exactly.
So that, you know, setting aside usually what the first one is, what makes like a good second one? Like for me, if you look at, you know, not everyone was a fan of the Dark Knight like story per se, like, you know, for the film, you know, there was some issue, like some people didn't care for, you know, how just like the bomb thing on the boat and that sort of thing, or you know there are certain stuff that not everyone was on board with, but for the most part everyone was on board with the Joker.
Right. Yes.
So for me, a second superhero movie should focus on like the villain. The villain should be really good.
Okay.
For me, that like helps make it, because you've told the story already of the hero.
Right.
You don't want to just completely abandon him. You still want to have some growth, but you need that like solid villain, I think, in that second one to really make it exciting for the audience and for the hero, who's sort of like, he's now, he or she should say, has, you know, kind of stepped into this role now of being this superhero. Now they need to kind of have their world affected by something kind of completely out of the blue. You know, they think so that like for me, like the villain is, the villain should be good. I'm not saying like, oh, the villain can be crappy in the first one, but you can it can be looked over slightly because as long as you nail the hero's journey type of thing, like you can kind of like, okay, maybe it didn't have like the most awesomest villain, but it was still a fun movie, you know,
right.
type of thing.
It was it was still a good version of this blank character, of insert name of character story.
Okay.
So like, so,
I mean, this isn't really a superhero movie per se, unless I guess some people would probably consider it this way.
Okay.
But so far it sounds like one of the better templates for you would be kind of the Star Trek movies. Because the first one kind of glossed over of the new ones.
Yeah.
Kind of glossed over the bad guy. I mean, definitely still somebody you wouldn't want to mess with. But in the second one definitely kind of plowed into making the bad guy a big thing.
I would say it went for that, but unfortunately...
Didn't quite deliver.
It didn't deliver, like... spoiler, quote unquote, Khan.
Right.
To me, like... They didn't do enough with him. It was just like, hey, I'm Khan. They kind of sprinkled little bits. Like, I mean, this is just my personal opinion. I thought the Klingons were way cooler. And it was like, they were one scene, one part. I just thought they had like way cooler stuff. I would have preferred like, hey, let's go back to them. Like, Khan's, I mean, it wasn't bad. I just like, I would have preferred more of his backstory. Like more of, it was just like, hey, I woke up and I'm going to blow some stuff up and I can punch and do things because I'm superhuman. But hey, we're not really going to explain any of this stuff. And then we're going to put him back in the freezer.
It does seem to, that movie does seem to depend a little bit too much on people knowing that Khan is supposed to be somebody.
But going back to like the Thor of the Dark World, I thought the film was fun. I enjoyed it. But the villain was like barely in the movie. Like it could have. Okay, I'll give one example. I did like that, and I'm not gonna really spoil anything or anything. I did like that the villain wasn't this sort of super powered being. He just seemed like, okay, I'm kind of the leader of these dark elves, because like Thor was beating him up and still doing stuff. So I kind of liked that aspect of it. He wasn't just like, well, here's Thor, this giant tough guy. Let's just make a big tougher guy. Like
the Dragon Ball Z scenario.
Yeah,
I like that he was. It didn't super deliver on this, but I liked that they had it as him as just kind of outwitting a lot of.
Yeah, so I like that aspect of it, but he wasn't like, he didn't have much of a presence in the movie. The character could have really been just about anybody. Like there wasn't, at least for, this is just my feeling. I mean, I thought he looked really cool and I like the actor that they got. It's just like, they didn't really give him much to do. He would just show up in a scene and was like, dark elf language, and then we will destroy the Asgard because they stopped us from ruling the galaxy. Like there wasn't much to it. It was like, I was really hoping he would be more of an interesting character, because in the trailer they show that one scene where he has like that speech of like, you know, are you going to sacrifice blah 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 to you know, save everything. And it was like, whoa, okay, this is going to be like an interesting guy that's going to make Thor make all these choices.
It's going to be like an actual nemesis.
Really,
but
that was, and I got to say that like all powerful super weapon thing was, didn't really seem all super powered really, to be honest. But the ether, I think it was called, or something.
Right.
The ether.
There was no,
I think they had some cool ideas behind it.
Yeah.
But it
just, when they were actually using it, it was like, really, this is the, This is the super weapon you're talking about? I mean, it's...
Yeah, it's one of those things where you get caught because in order to have it deliver on it being as super as it is, it means that the story's over.
Yeah.
And so you have to have it in, like, the sub-super flux in order to halfway kind of deliver, and you can't do that terrible well. And what's interesting about it, too, at least in that movie, and I have a feeling this is quickly just going to turn into a Thor 2 sort of thing, but I think people expected so much stuff from that movie just because of little bits and pieces that they really liked from all of the other Thor moments in the original Thor movie and Avengers, of course, that they ended up more concerned with delivering on those. And I think they did a good job on delivering on those, like pretty well, again, without spoiling much of anything. So you'll get a lot of those things that you wanted out of the movie, but you won't it's going to be at the cost of the main villain, it seems like.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Loki, hands down, was awesome.
Like, he's cool.
Yeah. This one was like the Loki I wished was in the Avengers.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I can see that.
Like, I like that character, just they was very underutilized in the Avengers, and like this, I'm glad, like, the scenes they had with him was like, yes, all right, these are cool. Like,
yeah, I kind of wish that there was some sort of throwaway thing in Avengers that made you think that force was messing with his brain a little bit more. Because it felt like that to me. It felt like he wasn't quite himself.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he had some cool stuff in that too, so I can't complain terrible much.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I mean, I believe all around we enjoyed the film. It was fun.
Yes.
But but yeah, it definitely didn't hit the mark that I like to look for in a superhero movie sequel, is a really solid villain.
So the way the next Captain America movie is shaping up, do you feel like does it look to you like they're gunning more for what's in your sights, or?
I think so. I mean, just judging by the trailer. I mean,
because it definitely has a nemesis, for best I can tell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely jump in, Caleb. I don't want to hog this whole thing.
No worries.
But
that was actually why I was pushing it this direction, since I know he has views on this.
I mean, since I never read the comic series, the Winter Soldier, just judging by the trailer, I think it has some cool potential, using sort of like Captain America, sort of versus like what the government,
right,
like this agency kind of thing wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're going to have like a specific, you know, Winter Soldier, like a nemesis. But I kind of like the idea also that there's sort of a bigger picture kind of thing. Like it still seems like it's going to fit that kind of style. Like there's, you know, so I'm optimistic for it. Like, I think.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing the Winter Soldier, the character, but I do like the way that the movie seems to be pushing, where it's sort of helping to galvanize the idea that Steve Rogers is Captain America, but he's not Captain Government Agent.
Yeah.
Because
he's a cog in this giant
wheel. Yeah.
Like he's not like, if you look at Tony Stark or something, where it's like big personality, like, bam, there's Tony Stark. Like,
right.
Captain America is a part of, like, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D., the government. Like,
he's a functional part of a larger thing.
Like a tool. Right. And now he's kind of reacting to, like, wait, how am I going to be used?
And it,
like, this is fair. Like, this isn't right. Like,
And it's interesting, too, just because since he is modeled after the World War II kind of hero, It was really easy back then, like, America type of thing, because, I mean, you can't get a better thing to go after than Nazis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They haven't invented something yet that I can think of. It's still, like, one of the most despised ideas that that we have right now.
it's
Nazis, robots, and alien invasions. Like, between those three, you have a guarantee of everyone rallying behind this.
Once they combine all those, man, that's going to be either the worst or the best movie ever.
I believe Iron Sky proved something there.
That's true.
I still need to see that movie. But it's interesting seeing him try and... It looks like it's him trying to reacquire those values that he just took for granted before.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So, yeah, definitely.
So then, since I kind of gave an example of stuff that I like in a superhero movie sequel, what are some of the elements that you hope to look for or...
It's so case by case basis for me because I don't have a concrete thing. I end up feeling like one of those guys that says, I don't really know art, but I know what I like type of thing. Because, I can't think of a template offhand because I've been really happy with certain ones that haven't been really big successes and vice versa. So.
But in the ones that you do like, was there an element that you could kind of like, not, it doesn't have to be the end all be all, but something like, you know, when they did this and this kind of element showed up over here, this is really cool when this happens.
In a way, it points to me more of my disappointment with a lot of the superhero movies lately. It seems like they do a really good job of creating a big spectacle that's fun to watch, lots of fun explosions and people gallivanting, but it feels like it's missing kind of the bigger scheme in a lot of ways, and I agree with the core villain, like the nemesis idea. I feel like most of the movies haven't really achieved that terribly well. It's weird. Like, the first Iron Man movie felt like it had a better nemesis than any of the following Iron Man movies to me.
Yeah, I would totally
agree. And it's so weird because it's a completely outside of the storyline invented nemesis.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it turned out really cool.
Yeah.
So I guess I end up sort of respecting when they have that sort of creation process a little bit more, where it was just a group of people gathering around the table. Like, they had an idea of what they were going to do, but that movie was completely molded by the actors and directors just sitting around and talking about what should happen next. And I think they did a really good job with that. I don't know what ended up getting lost in the second movie, since it was the same people effectively and for the most part.
Right.
But I don't know if it was certain actors not being there as much during that process. But yeah, I really enjoy how that sort of creative process comes together.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I would say, because, like, I liked, you know, overall, you know, I enjoyed Iron Man 2, sort of going, like, with that example. Uh-huh. But yeah, like, to me, the Mickey Rourke's villain was pretty lame.
Yeah.
Like, it's... And
I ended up liking what's his name way better, the guy,
the other like industry guy,
right?
Or whatever.
I love that actor. I don't
Sam Rockwell.
Yes.
I think is his name.
Yeah, I enjoyed his
really
character
good.
Way more, and I kind of wish that he would have been the core villain in a way, but I can see how that would degenerate into what they effectively ended up having as the core villain in the third one.
So yeah, I was just thinking that. I was like, it's sort of a combo.
Yeah. So yeah, it's easier to pick apart what I don't like than to speculate what would have made him better.
And I mean, going back to like what I mentioned about, like, oh, you know, like for the Joker with the Dark Knight, like,
right.
If it doesn't have this really awesome villain, then I'm just going to like not like it. I mean, I don't think that's necessarily true. I mean, like you said, it is kind of a case-on-case basis. But I know generally when they do have a really cool villain,
uh-huh.
it has a, to me, it has a better, like, I have a better chance of enjoying it because right. there's just something else interesting for the hero to do besides, because you've already told like how he got all of his stuff and how he or she
right,
you know, became who they are. So you can't really fall back on that anymore.
Yeah, I mean, and a lot of my favorite movies are kind of based around the nemesis idea also. And I still like The Professional, like, massively. And I don't even really think I like Leon as a character all that much, or even Portman's character that much. But they do end up creating the perfect counterpoint for the bad guy in that movie.
Yeah.
And so it ends up being this weird, like, Triforce perfect thing.
Yeah.
But I think that...
Before you jump in, just if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Robots Attack, one and only Geek Central talk show here on KACU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, The Underground Sound. We're in the core. We're discussing what we like, what we don't like about superhero movie sequels. You know, because we just watched the Thor: The Dark World, and there's been a lot of talk on the Batman Superman movie that's coming out. So you know, it just got us thinking. Like, what are the things we like? What are the things we don't like? So you were saying,
the thing that I'm kind of with you. Like in a sequel, the sequel needs to really up the ante in terms of risk for the hero. And that can be a villain, a particular villain whose personality is comparable to the hero's, or an event that, you know, like, I think you can make a cataclysm of some sort the villain, and, you know, it makes it Race Against Time movie, but, you know, but you can still do a lot with that. I definitely think that, you know, in the first movie, you have, you know, you establish a character, but then we need to, the second movie needs to kind of show how this person responds to risk, how they respond to loss.
Yeah.
And I think a good example of this is Mass Effect 2. Like, they change a lot in the first 10 minutes of the game. And then,
sort of loss of yourself in a weird sort of way.
Yeah. And
take a shot.
Yeah. But
water.
Yeah, of every beverage of choice. I think that's where you can kind of begin to galvanize the hero character, but also how the hero character interacts with the universe and the world in which they live. Because that's where I think a lot of the interesting things begin to happen. Is once you know who they are, it's like, but now that they are there, how does the world respond to them, and how does he respond to the world? Or how does the hero respond to the world?
And that one is a good example, too, of you get introduced to the Elusive Man and the Collectors.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, and those, you know, both interesting quote-unquote villains, like, maybe,
though still
maybe
not necessarily, like, the final bad guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think that's what helps push a sequel into something new, because, and then the third one can, and if there's a sequel to this, to the second film, a third story, then you can kind of start getting into, like, then you can kind of get back into the interpersonal stuff again, like, how does the hero within themselves find what it takes to move on to the next phase of life as the hero.
It is funny, though, like, I think what I enjoy so much about the third Iron Man movie, even though I don't really consider it my favorite, is that it refuses at every single turn to go that direction. Like, it ups the ante as far as, like, well, am I going to lose my love? Mm-hmm. And then it flips it on its head at the very end, without revealing too much, by completely pulling that away from the equation. And it does it again by turning the villain character on its head, which I'm sure is common knowledge by now, too. And those little choices where they completely change how the game is played is what I really like about the movie. So, but again, that might just be because it's a third installment and they feel like they can have that liberty.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of do something different.
Yeah. Yeah, and that, because the third one can kind of
move through things and then pull them back into, like, you know, just telling a good story again, as opposed to advancing, like, some sort of overarching plot, which is...
Throw them out there on a bungee cord and, like, yank them back.
Which is why I'm a little bit curious what's going to happen with the Superman Batman movie, because it's like you're making a sequel to Superman, which is good, but then you're introducing a new kind of Batman, so that's going to be how does that play?
That's going to be interesting too, because it's going to it's supposed to be introducing a new kind of Batman, but I assume it's trying to make it so familiar that it doesn't seem like you have to do an entire new backstory and whatnot anyway, which I think is a cool idea, but how they'll actually pull that off is scary to me.
Yeah, because he's supposed to be kind of a veteran already, and then will he be the quote-unquote villain for the movie, like the whole movie, or just a chunk of it? And then, say, maybe Lex Luthor or something else is, you know, becomes the real villain. Or I'm curious how they're going to handle that one, since so far a lot of it has been like Batman versus Superman. That's all they've really talked about.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I see some good opportunities there as far as kind of pitting Batman versus Lex Luthor in the background, just because you have these massive captains of industry, and so they'd have some interesting interactions just as far as the rich guy versus rich guy scenario.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's potential for it to work out really well, and I'm afraid it might not work out as well as I would like it to. That's... Come on,
Ben Affleck isn't that bad.
It's not Ben Affleck that I'm worried about. Subtlety is not what some of these directors are. It's not what the director's especially good at in a lot of ways.
That's true.
And it seems like the direction that you're kind of going to go with some of these.
Reference Sucker Punch.
Yeah.
Not much subtlety in that.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like the to do this kind of story well is going to require a certain amount of subtlety. So it's just, not that I think he can't do it. It's just, it's not a strong suit. So I'm like, I'm just not sure how that's going to play out. And that makes me a little bit nervous.
Yeah.
But he's good at throwing subtlety out the window too, in my opinion. So.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, like I said, there's a place for that style of filmmaking.
Just not in your living room.
I'm just not sure that's going to play well into the story that it sounds like they're preparing. That's all.
You know. Fair enough.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to wait and see. Hopefully they have a trailer sometime next year.
Yeah.
And we'll see how it is. All right. That's going to do it for Robots Attack tonight. Let us know what you think of superhero movie sequels, what you like, what you don't like.
Mm-hmm. What you would like to see more of.
Exactly. Caleb, tell them quickly how they can do that.
If you'd like to do that, you can leave a comment on Facebook, do a search for Robots Attack, two words, and you'll find us. Or you can hit us up on Twitter. Our handle is RobotsAttackMe. Or you can always send it to us the old email way, which is RobotsAttackShow@gmail.com.
Go ahead.
And finally, if you just want to find more episodes of the cool things we do, you can hop over to RobotsAttack.me, and that has all of our archive episodes plus links there.
Alrighty, that's gonna do it. Coming up next, the Pre-Funk Show. Stick around. Great music, cool guys. And if you're like me and you're gonna be waiting in line for the Xbox One tonight, let us know. Hit us up on our Facebook page, the Twitter page, all the things that Caleb mentioned. Alright, have a great weekend, and we won't be seeing you next week because it's Thanksgiving, so have a great Thanksgiving or whatever you celebrate if you're Festivus. In another country. Right. All right, we're out of here.
Raccoon. Baradin. Mistel.